all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information. Good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's another beautiful day up north on this Wednesday, May 24th, as we creep that much closer to a long and very well-deserved holiday weekend. 54 degrees right now up here on Lake Wissota. Coming up on the show this morning, a global problem with local solutions. The question is can be asked, can local actions help tackle a global problem like a changing climate? The answer is yes. If you were going to do a global problem, it would require somebody with a red cape who could fly around the planet. It's going to be up to all of us at our own local levels to address the issue of a changing climate, mitigating the damages, and stop contributing to the problem. And this week's Climate Check segment shows us how local leaders across Wisconsin are banding together to share ideas and put them into action. We will talk to the first executive director of the Wisconsin Local Government Climate Coalition. Allison Carlson was just named to that post, and she will join Melissa Baldoff as part of our new Wednesday morning Climate Check series. In our second hour this morning, we're going to compare gophers and badgers, not so much from, you know, a zoological standpoint, but from a legislative standpoint. Listen to this list. Paid family leave, medical privacy for women with their reproductive health rights, legal marijuana, transgender rights, gun safety, voting rights, affordable housing, public school support. Absolutely none of these things will be accomplished by the Republicans running the Wisconsin legislature, while Democrats running the Minnesota legislature, with a narrow majority, by the way, have been able to check off everything on their to-do list to one degree or another. And we're going to talk about this in the next hour, not to, you know, belittle our own state, but to tell us what can happen when we all work together. We talked on, it was yesterday, to my colleague from North Carolina about how Wisconsin could go to an even darker place as we see happening in North Carolina right now. So we wanted to show the other side of that equation, the better places that Wisconsin could go to with a little more work, a little more success. It's going to take a bit to overcome gerrymandering, but when you look at where we are now versus where we could be and versus where we could end up, hopefully it'll motivate some more folks to stay engaged, stay involved, bring a friend to the polls next time, and, you know, give ourselves a better tomorrow and give ourselves something more like the adulthood that we thought we signed up for and not the one that we ended up getting, where cartoon villains like Ron DeSantis can run for president and announce on Twitter, of all things. It's something we'll get into as well. On the much happier side, the Milwaukee Brewers, who were winners last night, are going to wrap up their series with the Houston Astros this afternoon. Then the San Francisco Giants come to Milwaukee for a four-game series this weekend. And coming up later this hour, we are going to give away four tickets to Friday night's game against the Giants at American Family Field. So stick around for our history lesson and our music break at 6:50, because somewhere in there as well, we will ask a question, and whoever calls in first with the correct answer at 844-967-2789, who can win Brewers tickets, meaning you haven't won any in the past 30 days, and you can have the tickets emailed to you. You're going to get four great seats to Friday night's game, so stand by for that. Let's see. You can call us with anything else that's on your mind that we talk about today, again, at the aforementioned 844-967-2789. And that may include, as we go through just various headlines in our next segment here, it may include the debt ceiling and wondering what you think in terms of whether President Biden should at some point pull the plug on the, frankly, the silliness of what Republicans are being asked or are asking for in negotiations. And just make clear that the 14th Amendment applies here. Now, of course, there will be blowback. What's your thought? Is it worth it? Is it not worth it in terms of what it might do to the political climate or the markets or what have you? So again, 844-967-2789 would be the number to call for that. Let's see, about 3 hours south of here, in a rapidly emptying Madison studio, we find just a few sparse furnishings left, including Aaron Zommers, who's producing us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Yep, it is emptying faster and faster, and hopefully within the next week or so, I will also be out of here.
Do they come with the U-Haul? Do they just like strap you onto a dolly and then load you on the truck as well? Or
I'm not sure. We'll okay. see, I guess.
And how else does this work? Because it's a pretty nice building the new studio is going to be in. Do you get like a key or a key card, or do you have to know somebody to get in early in the morning? How's that going to work for you? I'm a little concerned about our first couple of shows there.
Yeah, I hope I get a key.
Me too. Because again, it's going to be a nice facility. That's just, you know, hopefully we don't have too many growing pains as we go about doing it. But we will certainly welcome the upgrade and look forward for folks that watch on video, or we'll just take a video and we'll share that as well and show you our new digs just off Capitol Square in Madison, almost across the street from the state capitol, right at the top of State Street. All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, we will recap that Brewers-Astros game from last night and look at headlines and your phone calls as well. Coming up next, this is Up North News Radio for a Wednesday. This would be one Robert Allen Zimmerman from Hibbing, Minnesota. You know him better as Bob Dylan, and today is his 82nd birthday, and so we'll hear another clip from him coming up later this hour. And Aaron, I was asking you off air about Bob Dylan, and I think we both kind of come from the same place in that we respect the artist, but it doesn't mean that we listen to everything that comes out, and we, you know, some songs we like better than others. But now that one, for example, I don't know that I was ever familiar with the song Things Have Changed. I believe that's from the year 2000, and I've only heard it in the past couple of years, and I really like it, which is why I picked it for the bumper this time around. So, you know, he is still making some very good music in the 21st century. It's not just a thing from the 1960s, Aaron.
Yeah, that's very true. And a lot of it's really good. I just usually don't seek it out for whatever reason. Although I definitely have some friends who will not listen to Bob Dylan because they can't stand his voice. I do not fall in that camp.
No, I mean, look, it's a signature sound. You know, that's one way to look at it. And there are things that have been, you know, that he has done that other people have done differently, and maybe you prefer, you know, something like Blowing in the Wind, or some of the other tunes that he's done. But then you hear some that are just fun, you know, like a Rolling Stone, Positively Fourth Street, you know, for example. You know, Lay Lady Lay is, you know, so different than what he was doing in the 60s compared to his early 70s work. So when you talk about a musician as an artist, somebody who has tackled different sounds over the years, I think that, yeah, there's a reason he's kind of on some people's Mount Rushmore that way. But so we want to play something from, you know, the 2000s, and we'll play one of his classics a little bit later on in this hour as well. All right, let's get to sports at just about 6:18 right now, and the Milwaukee Brewers are winners at home against Houston. Home runs from Joey Weimer and Owen Miller as the Brewers stopped an 8-game winning streak by the Astros by winning 6-0 last night. Starting pitcher Colin Ray went 5 1/3 innings. He gave up 4 hits, struck out 4 batters, and most importantly, no runs. Then four relievers combined to protect the Brewers' fifth shutout of the season. Joey Weimer's third inning solo drive went 430 feet over the left field bullpen, making it the Brewers' second longest home run this season. Brian Anderson hit a two-run double in the eighth inning. And the two teams will wrap things up this afternoon in Milwaukee. Adrian Hauser will take the mound. You can listen in the Fox Valley on 98.3 Oshkosh Air Support, also at 1100 AM, or News from the Center in Richland Center at 107.7 FM and 1450 AM. And then, as mentioned before, we are going to be giving away Brewers tickets coming up at 6:50. That will be four tickets to Friday night's game at American Family Field. So you're going to want to stick around for that. I'm going to try to approach the debt ceiling negotiations without being, I don't know, shall we say, overly dismissive about it, because, I mean, the honest truth is I have always thought that this is a rather silly debate, and I think that Democratic presidents have tolerated it long enough. And I say Democratic presidents because of what we learned last week. And I don't know that anybody was necessarily going to pick up on this trend until it actually happened. But as we mentioned on either Thursday or Friday, I think, President Biden was going to have a more extensive tour of Pacific Rim allies, including Australia and Papua New Guinea. And Biden had to cancel it to fly back to Washington, to sit in the Oval Office and let photographers snap some pictures with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and say all the right things that we're making progress, et cetera, et cetera. But what it served to do was undermine American diplomacy at a time when China is building its influence and flexing its military muscle. And that's when we came to learn, after connecting the dots, that this is the third Democratic president now that has had to cut short or cancel a trip to visit Asian and Pacific Rim allies in order to deal with some kind of Republican temper tantrum on the budget. You know, once is unique, twice is interesting. By the third time, you're raising an eyebrow going, you know, I think that this is just getting to be too much of a trend, and it's doing too much to undermine America's long-term goals, because the debt limit is, what's the phrase, an artificial construct. It's made up. It's not real. What's real is the Constitution. What's real is the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which says something along the lines of that the debts of the United States shall not be questioned. In other words, the full faith and credit of the United States government is real. And if the United States government has to create more debt, meaning the bonds that get sold, do you know who's going to buy those, whatever the size of our debt at this point? Everybody. It's still the one place in the world where people go if they're looking to park money someplace in something that is safe, stable, reliable. It doesn't mean it's going to get you monster interest rates, as if you were to, you know, gamble on stocks or sports teams, but it's safe and stable. It won't be if Republicans allow the country to default on that debt. Or should I say, if we allow Republicans to have the country default on that debt, when there is already a mechanism in place that says, this is silly, what are we talking about? If you want to talk about spending cuts, we have a place to do that. It's the federal budget. And if the president wants to, maybe humor isn't the right word, but, you know, engage in contingencies and you know, proposals about limiting spending next year or even cutting spending next year, that's fine. That's fine. Have that discussion about what is going to be in the next budget. But frankly, this is getting old. This is getting to the troubling point for the markets, that we're watching this dithering going on as Republicans hold the economy hostage. And again, they won't put up or compromise a penny of the 2017 tax cuts that primarily benefited the very wealthy. They won't compromise a penny on military spending, which is more than something like the next 9 or 10 countries combined. Don't tell me there's not room for efficiencies in there. And unfortunately, our politics have become toxic to the point where to suggest that the Pentagon should buy not one less fighter jet, but one less box of paper clips, the commercials will start flying that politician so-and-so is against our troops, is against our military, and they've got the money to buy the ads. Trust me. That the defense budget has become such a sacred cow. It is unimaginable that any president would allow for and tolerate any discussion about cutting veterans' healthcare programs, education, job creation, cracking down on tax cheats, without saying as well, all right, what are you giving up? And that's the thing that's especially tiring here is I'm still waiting for that from Kevin McCarthy and from other Republicans. What are you giving up in this in return for all the punishing cuts that you want to give to regular Americans? What are you willing to do that's going to make you sweat a little bit? I haven't heard a damn thing about that, have you? And so at some point, you'd like to think, and again, I watched a lot of West Wing, so maybe I'm dramatizing things just a little bit in my head, but maybe at some point, you know, President Biden walks into the Oval Office and says, hi guys, hey, this is going to be real short and sweet. You've got 5 minutes to outline what you're giving up in terms of the tax cuts and or the military and or, outsourcing jobs or repatriating funds that are parked on spreadsheets overseas to avoid taxes. And if you don't give me a real plan in 5 minutes, this whole thing is done. And we'll talk about the budget. We can talk about the budget because, you know, the Republicans only control the House. Democrats control the Senate and the White House. And so it's not, there's no my way or the highway on any of this. And yet the national media continues to frame it that way, that if President Biden doesn't play ball and agree to these punishing cuts, then these terrible things are going to happen. No. No, the real scandal here is that a major American party is not only perfectly willing to crash the national economy, but appears to be rooting for it. Because if times are bad over the next 18 months, they believe the voters will take it out on Joe Biden. And I think that's the thing that really people should be more aware of, and not to make them cynical, but there's some very raw politics involved here that we already saw at the state level. We saw throughout the first term of Governor Tony Evers, a Republican-controlled legislature that did everything possible to be confrontational and obstructionist in the hopes that it would undermine him in the eyes of the voters, and that the Republican nominee, who they thought for the first 3.5 years was going to be Rebecca Clefish until it was Tim Michaels, but that either way, if they just stalled and were obstinate long enough, they could win the governor's office. That's exactly the strategy here, is they don't get hurt by a punished economy. They don't get hurt if unemployment benefits are slashed further as a recession kicks more people out of their jobs. But they're helped if a bad economy means that somebody becomes president instead of Joe Biden in 2024. Will it be Ron DeSantis? I don't think I heard any of you out there saying yes. I listened very closely. I didn't hear anybody say yes. The man is going on not just Twitter, but what is it? Twitter Spaces, which is like their audio channel for Twitter. So about 6 people are going to hear, you know, a white supremacist talk to an anti-Semite as DeSantis and Elon Musk kick off a Ron DeSantis presidential campaign. But Republicans are going to put their hopes in somebody. It's either going to be Donald Trump, who found out this week he's going to be in a court on trial next March in the middle of the primaries, or Ron DeSantis or Tim Scott, who just launched his campaign, or Nikki Haley or somebody. And for all of that uncertainty about their nominee, they're still willing to crash the economy to help whoever it is that's running as the nominee in 2024. Melissa Baldoff is in next with our weekly climate check. This is Up North News Radio for a Wednesday. It's electric. Welcome back to Up North News Radio. It is time to check the climate in Wisconsin with Melissa Baldoff, as we're going to each week at this time. And, you know, people sometimes get overwhelmed about climate change because it is quite literally a global issue. And the attention often goes to huge entities. There's international protocols, there's policy fights in Congress. But like so many big issues, there's progress to be made at the more personal levels, our state, our hometown, our household. So for a minute, I'd like you all to set aside the Kyoto Agreement or the Paris Accords, set aside Ron Johnson telling us that global warming should bring us comfort since most of the deaths won't happen in Wisconsin. Eye roll inserted here, please. And for the moment, we can even set aside how a legislature can belittle a serious problem and thwart the leadership being provided by a governor. Let's get to that hometown level with Melissa and her guest, Allison Carlson. She's the new leader of a group that helps Wisconsin communities pursue strategies that address the climate and provide some new economic opportunities at the local level. But before we bring in Allison, let's say good morning to Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How about you?
Great, thanks. But, you know, I don't mean to belittle what happens at the state level, because that's where you've spent a lot of valuable time. So first question goes to you, and then we're going to bring in Allison. Can you talk a bit about at the state level, in a governor's office, specifically to Governor Evers, climate is not a throwaway issue. This is something that's important not just to the planet or to a political philosophy, but to a state economy as well, isn't it?
Absolutely it is. And, you know, I think that's something that's really, you know, an interesting perspective too that Governor Evers has brought to this issue, is he's a former science teacher, as you know. So, you know, this is something he cares about on so many levels, you know, interesting in, you know, how it affects the economy, how we're leaving the world for our kids, how this is affecting our farmers. We know that as the climate changes, it really impacts their ability to, you know, to make a living, to provide the food that we need. It affects tourism. It affects our, you know, conservation heritage, people's ability to hunt and fish. So this is a really big issue. And as you mentioned, kind of at the top here, yes, so much of that great work is being done state, national, internationally, but really, like so many other issues, it all comes down to what's happening in our communities, and local governments really are leading the charge on so much of this work that is happening and on the progress we're making. So, you know, I think it's really wonderful that we've got Allison here with us today to be able to talk a little bit about, you know, what the Wisconsin Local Government Climate Coalition is doing as a whole, and, you know, a little bit about some of what the members are doing and why this is important and why so many local governments said, hey, let's come together and try to make some progress here, because it is an area where they can rely on one another and share best practices. So I think that's, you know, a great opportunity to hear from Allison,
who is going to be the first executive director of the Wisconsin Local Government Climate Coalition. Allison, thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, before we get to your experience coming into this, can you tell us just a little bit more about what the Wisconsin Local Government Climate Coalition is all about?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. Wisconsin Local Government Climate Coalition is a group of local governments that have come together. We have about 18 members right now and growing strong. using their collective voice to support policies and outcomes that will advance their climate and clean energy goals and try to break down barriers. They also provide a platform for members to be able to learn from each other and to try to solve problems together. We know local governments are often stretched in terms of resources, in terms of their budgets and staff capacity. So it's really an opportunity for them to be able to have peer-to-peer learning opportunities and rely on each other. They come to it with different levels of expertise, different experiences, and just to be able to kind of raise the baseline for everyone so we all can make progress.
And the thing that's unique about this is that local units of government aren't just bodies that set policy, they're ratepayers. They use a lot of power themselves, don't they?
That's right. Yeah. Yep. They have facilities, they pay energy bills. So they have a lot of work to do within their own facilities and the things that they do. And then also they also serve a population that has energy bills and lots of improvements that they can make to make climate action happen.
So in the description of the group, it talks about you've worked at the Public Service Commission, but in the private sector, you've also led projects to help government entities as they plan, implement, and evaluate programs that can benefit residents and businesses, which leads to this question. What are the kinds of local programs that local units of government are doing or are talking about doing? And having a coalition like this where they can talk to one another can help make those things more successful, more efficient. What kinds of programs are we talking about?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, we have a diverse set of communities within the Local Government Climate Coalition. We have communities that are larger, like Madison and Milwaukee. We have communities that are mid-sized, like the city of Green Bay, La Crosse. We have Eau Claire. And then we have smaller communities as well, like Baraboo and counties that serve more rural areas, like parts of Eau Claire County. So a lot of different diverse perspectives and experiences that all kind of add to things. Communities are doing a lot in terms of climate action. I mean, we have communities that are doing energy efficiency projects, like upgrading their LED lighting in community centers. We have communities that are doing deep energy retrofits, like multifamily low-income property upgrades. Our communities are electrifying their bus fleets and partnering with their utility companies with focus on energy, on installing solar. So there's a wide variety of different actions that they're taking. I think you see communities taking their climate goals and, you know, what actions they can take to make progress on those, and then also pairing it with other needs within the community, like I just mentioned, community centers. So trying to also make an impact on some of those other co-benefits, like bringing down energy costs for residents and making an impact, making housing safer and costs more affordable. So there's a wide variety of things that communities are doing.
That's really great to hear. And, you know, so you mentioned a few of the communities that are part of this coalition. And I'm just curious, you know, about like how much of the state has a stake in this coalition. You know, is this, you know, like a third of the state, a half of the state? Like how much are we talking about?
Sure. Yeah. Like I said, you know, it's growing day by day. A lot of the growth right now really just comes from word of mouth. One local government representative who's a member talking to another saying, hey, you know, I belong to this coalition, you know, allows us to have a collective voice. We're getting benefits out of it, learning from each other. So a lot of it is just kind of spreading like that. Right now we represent over one third of the citizens of the state. And that's just over, you know, a short period of 2 years. I think since I joined the coalition a little under 2 months ago, we've already had two new members that have joined us. I think it's just growing. The word is kind of catching on that there's a benefit here and there's a benefit to communities partnering together on this and really understanding that local government voice in climate action is really unique and needs to be heard.
I think that's really great to hear. And, you know, I'm also curious, you know, how is the coalition connecting with state government? Is that something that, you know, that you're looking to get into, you know, talking to the PSC or the governor's office? You know, how are you connecting with state lawmakers and policymakers too?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question too. You know, in a lot of different ways. I mean, we are involved with the Public Service Commission and a lot of their dockets and rate cases where we see something that aligns with the policies, the outcomes that our communities want to prioritize. So weighing in on some of those dockets, providing comments or providing letters. We're also partnering with the state and really paying close attention to some of these opportunities that are coming out from the Inflation Reduction Act. You know, as you know, that is, you know, a real, those will be a lot of funds that will be coming out to local communities. We want those dollars to actually reach the citizens of the state so they all can benefit. So we'll be working with the state. They're leading the Climate Pollution Reduction Program, grant program. And there will be some more planning related to that towards the end of the summer and early fall. And then from out of that will come implementation grants that communities can apply to. So we really, really want local government needs and priorities to be represented in that plan. So those benefits, like I said, can get back to the state and the citizens.
Allison, what can the state and federal governments do to be most helpful? Obviously, the first thing I think everybody thinks of is, you know, that this is a budget, this is a money thing. But beyond the funding, whether it is providing incentives versus setting standards versus, and I hate to bring this up, but providing disincentives. We're actually seeing that now from the legislature and certainly talk in Congress about, you know, forbidding local governments to do X, Y, or Z because heaven forbid it might reduce, you know, their carbon footprint. What in your mind are the things that the state and federal governments can do to be most helpful to local units that want to take on climate initiatives?
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, for me, it kind of boils down to a few different, you know, key areas. So the first is, you know, increased funding, you know, for energy efficiency, for clean energy and climate projects. Basically, we need more resources on this. The Inflation Reduction Act, of course, is a very, very important kind of, you know, life-changing resource for communities. We also need smart policies and regulations that give local governments more clean energy and climate choices that will work for them and their unique communities. You know, even in Wisconsin, as we know, each community is a little different. So just opening up those opportunities and breaking down the barriers so they have a path available to them. And then also more tools and resources for local governments in meeting the challenges that they are facing. You know, an example of this might be increasing data sharing and emissions tracking so local governments can better understand, you know, where they need improvement and to set goals and, you know, identifying different model resolutions that might help them contribute to those emissions reductions and other support and funding.
When I see that you deal with things like fuel switching and demand response, I think most people think of something that's almost punitive, like if the power company needs to switch or if they need to, you know, cut my power for a while on a high demand day. And it's something that, you know, does save energy, but it impacts them. Do you foresee this turning around where at the household or the business level, they can do something in either the fuel switching or demand response or something that, you know, increases their efficiency as they want to do it, not as a utility directs them to?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and in Wisconsin, we have a really great resource, a program called Focus on Energy. It's a statewide program that's offered in the state. And there will be federal dollars, Inflation Reduction Act dollars flowing through that soon as well, that will even open up more resources on things like heat pumps and things like that. And Focus on Energy also has a lot of technical resources too. So if you're a customer or a business that is looking for a place to start, that is a really excellent place to do it.
If somebody is listening right now and they're thinking, I would love to have my community involved in this. My community is not involved in this, but I would really love to have my community to get involved in this. You know, what should people know, and how can they connect with the coalition, and how could somebody get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go to our website, WLGCC.org, we have a section on, you know, how do you join? What does it mean to be a member? So that's a great resource. I am also happy to meet with communities on a one-on-one basis and kind of go over what it means, what the values of membership are. You know, what a community generally will do is they will pass a resolution through their common council or governing board and get that approved, basically saying, you know, we're joining WLGCC. You know, they have these values, they align. Here are some of our climate action goals that we have, and then basically assign a staff person to it that can attend our meetings and is able to weigh in and help partner with us on our work. So it's a pretty simple process. There's no cost to joining. We would love to have to increase the number of members across the state. That would be wonderful.
Allison Carlson is the new first executive director for the Wisconsin Local Government Climate Coalition. Allison, thanks so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And Melissa Baldoff, we have really kicked things off on just the right note for a regular climate check. Thanks so much for bringing Allison to our attention, and we'll talk more about related issues in the weeks to come.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio will be here, and we are going to give away 4 tickets to Friday night's Brewers game at American Family Field. So stick around for that. Coming up in just a bit, you're up north.
Son, Abe said, man, you must be putting me on. God said, no. Abe said, what? God said, you can do what you want, Abe, but next time you see me coming, you better run.
Bob Dylan's birthday is 82 years old today.
Wow.
Well, Abe said, well, you want this killing done. God said, hold on, Highway 61.
Highway 61, reminiscent of where Bob Dylan was born in Duluth, Minnesota, raised in Hibbing, Minnesota, and again, 82 years old today. Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio is here as well. Melissa, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Oh, I'm good.
Good, good.
Where are you on? I don't think I've ever heard that song.
Really? Yeah, I don't know that I did as a younger person, but then heard it more later on. And of course, I grew up right off of Highway 61, you know, over in the St. Paul area. And I heard that. It kind of strikes a chord. Where are you on the spectrum of Bob Dylan? Fan, not a fan, like him, don't like him? He's there.
He's okay. He's there. Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Say, I know what. I'm sure I know a lot of his songs, but I couldn't tell you any.
Oh, yeah. There would be somebody we'd go, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was him? Oh, yeah. I know that.
He's been all over the place. He's 82. Yeah. Now, here's somebody I did not think was going to make it to 85. Happy birthday to Tommy Chong of Cheech and Chong. Who knew? But between him and what's his face? From the Rolling Stones, Keith Richards. It's like apparently living hard can lead to longer living. Who
just
knew?
This works for some people.
Yeah. Patti LaBelle is 79 today. And the thing that I think is most amazing is we were talking, Aaron, last week about the Jimmy Fallon show, That's My Jam. And I'm pretty sure I mentioned at the time, Patti LaBelle still hitting every note
at age
79. Oh, my goodness. Just amazing talent there.
Awesome.
Priscilla Presley is 78 years old today.
78.
Yeah, you always just think of her as practically a child bride, if you will. Roseanne Cash, 68 years old today. So Johnny Cash first became a parent with his first wife 68 years ago today. Hmm. On this day in 1967, he has since passed away, but rapper Heavy D was born in Jamaica. Heavy D was, the D stands for Dwight Myers. He was born in Mandeville, Jamaica. Passed away in 2011 from a pulmonary embolism caused by a blood clot in his leg, most likely formed during a long plane ride from the United Kingdom. Got to watch out for those plane rides, man. Keep those legs moving, you know?
No kidding.
And by the way, some folks may not know that this is a remake. That Now That We Found Love was originally done by the OJs in 1973. Really? It is not nearly, and I love the OJs, but their version's not nearly as good as, you know, what Heavy D and the boys did. The number one song on this day in 1969 from the Beatles was Get Back, featuring piano from Billy Preston.
Get back to where you once belonged.
So while Billy Preston plays, we'll mention that on this day in 1935, the first night game in Major League Baseball history was played. Want to take a guess what city had the first ever night game, Melissa?
Chicago?
That would have been my guess, too. It was Cincinnati. The Cincinnati Reds beat the Philadelphia Phillies 2-1 on this night in 1935. The number one song this day in 1975, Earth, Wind, and Fire with Shining Star. I dare anybody to listen to this intro and you not move your hands, you know, at the right time, right here. Yeah, just kind of get a jazz hands thing going there. All right, so we've had all this nice classic rock. We've talked about, you know, some you know, well-known artists. But, you know, Melissa, sometimes you got to take the good with the bad. And on this day in 1997, for better or for worse, the number one song was the debut single by some kids named Hanson. Oh, go on. Tell me, this was like your favorite song back then growing up.
No, it wasn't. Okay. But I do recognize it.
Yep. And by the way, now that was the number one single this day in 1997. The number one album this day in 1997 was also a debut act by some nice young ladies in the UK. Giving you everything, all that joy can bring, this I swear, I'll give you everything. Yeah, the Spice Girls, with the release of Spice, they became the first British act to debut at number one on the album chart. Something the Beatles never did. Had all the singles, but they never had an album debut at number one. Of course, now in this era of you know, mass sales, it's a lot easier to do. But
or I think they did have albums debut at number one in the U.S., but this was their first album, and the Beatles' first album did not debut at number one in the U.S.
Oh, you're talking about a debut album hitting number one. Got it. Thank you for clarifying that. And once again, we turn back to Melissa to tell us that she knows the words to every Spice Girls song.
And I know a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
I was more into SWV than the Spice Girls.
Oh, listen to you. Just when I think that you always say, oh, we didn't have a radio or TV growing up. You know, we just churned our own butter. And then you hit me with SWV. Wow.
Oh, I do know most of the words to Black Puddin'.
Okay. Wow. This is stunning. On this day in 2006, Taylor Hicks beat out Catherine McPhee to win season 5 of American Idol. Catherine McPhee, she's been in a couple of TV shows, and I've liked her acting chops, and she can clearly sing too, but I was not a regular American Idol watcher back then, shall we say. So what's happening at locally grown radio WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids these days, Melissa?
Well, we have exciting changes coming. Mm-hmm. Like most of the stations throughout Civic Media, our programming is changing up, so we're actually moving to a morning show on our country station WIRI from 7 to 8, and then we'll have our normal morning show on WFHR from 8 to 10. And our morning magazine segment is moving to the afternoon at, like, I think 3.
Wow.
I want to say 3.
All right. You got
to
keep up.
It's going to be mid-morning magazine or midday magazine. That's what it is. Midday magazine.
I don't doubt for a minute that if you go to civicmedia.us, you will see how the shows shape up. All right. Yeah. During the news break here, Aaron is going to be very busy taking phone calls. He's going to ask the question now during the news break. We'll let, you know, call in at 844-967-2789. Aaron, what's our question for 4 tickets for Friday night's Brewers game?
Well, a very important birthday in music history is coming up just over 2 weeks here on June 9th. And we'll talk about him in more detail then. But this Waukesha-born musician was the only person to be inducted into both the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the National Inventors Hall of Fame. Who was the inventor of the solid body electric guitar?
All right. Anybody in and around Waukesha, you have no excuse not for calling in and knowing this answer, being the first one to say and snagging four tickets to the Brewers game Friday night. Melissa, thanks for playing along with us. Good luck with all the schedule changes and have a great day.
Yeah, you too, guys. Good to see ya.
All right. Aaron's going to go get some phone calls and we're going to give away tickets. More in our next episode.